Okay, in the Snocha Mushroom on page 32, we're going to start Pasuk Dalet. Seven lines from the end of the page. Okay, Kilo Yomim Eid Shiva. Okay, now everything's ready to go. The Teva is built. Hashem's telling him to take two of the non-kosher animals, 7, 7, 14 of the kosher animals. How did Noach know? It's because he learned Torah. That's what it says. But Noach learned Torah. He knew what was kosher animals, what wasn't kosher. Okay? So now he says like this. Hashem says to Noach, Kilo Yomim Eid Shiva, in another 7 days, and we said these were the 7 days for the mourning period of Misu Shalach. They waited 7 days. I'm going to make it rain on the earth. 40 days and 40 nights. Why 40 days and 40 nights? So Rashi says, so we already discussed before, it's the concept of a mikvah. But that's deeper, according to Hasidus and Kabbalah. But Rashi says, 40 days is takes how long the embryo becomes formed. You know, from conception for 40 days, the baby is not completely formed yet. In 40 days, the baby is formed. So that's why it says 40 days. Another interpretation says, interestingly, even though the Torah wasn't given yet, but they didn't keep the Torah that was given in 40 days. So therefore Hashem says, I'm going to punish you for 40 days with the rain. So either because it's a mikvah, which is 40 saw, or like Rashi says, the creation of the embryo takes 40 days, or because they didn't keep the Torah, was given 40 days. Well, Machisi, I'm going to blot out, as kola yukum, here the English of yukum is existence. Hashem says, I'm going to wipe out everything that exists, which means not only animals, not only houses, everything that exists is going to be uprooted. Now, where does the word yukum as existence come? So some of Hashem explain, the root of yukum is kum, standing up, which means anything that stands up is going to be destroyed. Another thing is, that Barbanel says, it means anything standing. Like we said, houses, everything was destroyed. Mi'alpnei adama, from the face of the ground. So the Radak says, what does it mean from the face of the ground? The things in the ocean did not die. And we're going to learn later, how did the fish, who did not go into the Teva, how did they exist? It says they were in the water around the ark. So the question is, but it was boiling hot water. So many mafashim are holding, and the side of the table wasn't hot. And top of the table was hot. Around the side of the ark, the water wasn't hot. I mean, there's a lot, other people say the water was boiling hot, and it was a miracle that the fish existed. I mean, whatever, there's so many different interpretations actually what happened over here. What?
Fish are in an ocean. If it's raining on the land, the fish would have to come onto where the land was around the...
Yeah, but the question is, if it's so hot...
But what I'm saying is, the fish weren't there in that area to begin with, where
Right, but I'm saying the Mabel destroyed the whole world. By the way, it's interesting, we're going to see later, some of Farshim learn that the Mabel only destroyed the civilized world. People didn't live at that time in America, in who knows where. Yeah. Right? They didn't live there yet.
Yeah. Australia.
Right. I mean, so some of Farshim learn, so it's again, different opinions. Some of Farshim learn that the flood only destroyed the civilized world where people lived, not where they didn't live. Because that wasn't corrupt.
That makes sense.
Right.
With that much water going up,
then going to cover the whole world.
There's a lot of miracles. Eretz-Yisrael didn't have the flood.
But yeah. that actually makes...
Yeah, but I'm saying it doesn't make sense according to the laws of physics. Water finds its own level. If there's water, it's going to be all over the place equally. What?
But if it's in a major area, if it covers all civilized areas, it means that it's okay, it rains in one area. Yes, it makes sense, but that it would rain there and cover the whole world.
That's what I'm saying. It would cover the whole world, so it wasn't. What?
Hashem went through so much trouble to make...
He didn't go through trouble, no.
I mean, you know so much... So many words, right?
And to what?
To make the world.
Yeah.
And then, is it like exactly. No big deal, so to speak, to Hashem to like say, okay, you know, like find some little star lord and like it doesn't matter to Hashem?
It did. That's why Hashem purified the world.
So it's not like Hashem got rid of the world altogether.
No, the world, he didn't create a new universe after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
He created the living existences or the existences that people built, houses and so on, and he destroyed all of that. Okay, so the pasuk says like this. Next pasuk. Yas Noach, and Noach did k'chol asher tzivo Hashem, whatever Hashem commanded him. Now, Rashi says, what does it mean? What did he do? I mean, he already built the table. What did he do now? So Rashi says it means going into the teva. Hashem told him, come into the teva. Right? Because the question, what did Noach did everything Hashem commanded him to do? What did Hashem tell him to do? Building the ark he already did. So what did he do now? So Rashi says it means going into the teva. That he went into the teva. The Medrash says it means taking the animals into the ark. You know, two of the non-kosher, 14 of the kosher. Okay. Next, okay. The Noach ben Shesh Meyeshana, Noach was 600 years old, v'amabul hoya mayim al oretz, and the mabul began to come water on the earth. Okay?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Let's go back. When God made the world, he made it pure? When he made the world. Correct?
Yes.
Why did he make non-kosher animals? There's a purpose of non-kosher animals. Just because you're not allowed to eat them. I'll give you an example. A donkey, a mule, right? It's not kosher. But it's used in work, in doing things. A lion may not be a kosher animal. It's not. But a lion is symbolic of majesty, royalty, power, might. There's a lot of benefits of non-kosher animals. The non-Jews are allowed to have the non-kosher animals. God, created the world with everybody in it. So everybody got kosher food, non-kosher food. The Jews were commanded, this you can eat, this you can't eat. But as far as purpose and usage in the world, there was a big purpose of it.
Animals eat animals.
In fact, we'll soon learn that was one of the problems they had with the lions. Lions are meat-eating animals. So we'll learn, some people say it was a miracle, that year they became vegetarian, the lions. Yeah, miraculously the lions became vegetarian that year.
Really?
Who do you think they ate?
Yeah, they didn't have any other meat.
Right.
That was my question, the first
time
I asked
people. They didn't have any restaurants in the Ark, that's for sure.
Huh?
They didn't have any restaurants.
Yeah.
Now, it's important because of this pasuk. It says, Noach was 600 years old when the flood started. Correct? Now, the flood took Mamash a full year. Okay? Which means that Noach should be, at the end of the flood, 601 years old. Correct?
Right.
Then it says, after the flood, Noach lived 350 more years. And he died at 950. He should have died at 951 then. Right?
If
he was 600, when the flood started. Mm-hmm. We're not yeshiva bachim. Let's get straight. 600 plus 1 plus 350 equals 951. Yeah. Not 950. So the Medrash says, it's very interesting, that year of the flood was not counted in years of creation. There's like Shimshu Amazolis, you know, knowing the constellations, the seasons and everything. The Medrash says that year of the flood, there was no sun, there was no moon, there was no seasons, there was no nothing. Therefore, it didn't count in the years of the world. So Neach was 600, stayed 600.
Maybe it was no.
No.
Maybe it was not a year.
No, the Mepharshim explained, it was a year. According to the Pasuk says clearly it was a year. So the commentaries explain that because the world was dead, everything was dead, so you can't count it in time. Because everything was dead.
So technically it was 1951.
Yeah, but it wasn't counted. Okay.
He didn't age.
Huh?
He didn't age that
year plenty, as we'll soon get to. Okay. Vayavei Neach Ubanav, so Neach and his sons, Veishtei and the Shebanav, and this is based on what the Pasuk said earlier. Hashem said to him, you and your sons go in, your wife and the wives go in, which means the marital relations were forbidden during the year of the Teva. And one of the reasons is the world's suffering, so then you're not allowed to have marital relations. Okay. So then it says, Neach came to the ark. And even that, the Mepharshim say that he really didn't want to come. He was also a small believer. It was raining. When it started getting heavy, that's when he finally came into the ark. He also didn't believe it.
So?
The Medrash says, the interesting Medrash, but the Medrash says that right before the Mabul, before the flood, Hashem brought the sun up in the west and set it in the east. The opposite. Mm-hmm. Norman comes up in the east, sets in the west.
Yeah, awesome.
Hashem wanted to give the sinners one last chance. You see, I'm changing everything. The whole world is being changed. The sun comes up in the west and sets in the east. And they still didn't do tshuva. And we'll learn soon what happened when Neach went into the ark. The Medrash says 700,000 people, when it started raining hard, they came into Neach and they said, let us into the ark. And Neach said, now you wake up. It's too late. And they wanted to break down the door. But all the animals that didn't make it into the ark, right, they all started chasing them and killed them and they ran away. The people ran away. But even then they finally wanted to go into the Teva to be safe from the Mabul.
700,000 yep. people?
Yep.
How they came up with that number?
Here it says, here in this matter it says, Mizpah Gadol. But no, the Mepharshim say, I just saw, 700,000, I mean. And he said, it's too late, you're not coming in. Why?
I mean, all of these miracles happen every, like, one after another.
Why is it a big miracle? It's one big miracle.
One big family.
Nature is not a miracle.
But if it was
20,000
people,
it
wouldn't be a miracle.
No,
but
all the people
are on the sun. What? You always say Hashem accepts when
there are no miracles. Even
like last, you know.
At this stage of the game, it was too late. Hashem gave him a deadline. There's a tshuva deadline. And that was it. What?
How come there's no more miracles anymore?
You asking that?
There are miracles.
It's a miracle.
You woke up this morning, it's a miracle.
It's still miracles, but you know,
they shot how many rockets did they shoot the last month in Israel?
No, I'm saying besides that, every day of a person's life, the Gemara says, Ein b'al ha'nesem makir b'nisei. There's a pasuk we say every day, I mean in davening. So what do you mean, la'isin nifloiz g'daylus levadei, alone? So the Medrash says, the Gemara says, it's the simple meaning of the davening, by the way, and the pasuk can tell him, Hashem does want miracles that levadei, only he knows about it. Ain balanes makibinise. The people that a miracle happens to don't even realize a miracle happened to them. And therefore only God knows the miracle. But there was like 700,000 people.
Well, it's not like big miracles anymore.
Why not a big miracle?
Well, like big ones, like, you know, like song goes the other way or other.
Six day war wasn't a miracle? Yeah.
No, but I'm saying like a big miracle, like, you know, the burning bushes happening or all the big things that happened, you know, like before.
How do you know there's no burning bush happening? Have you checked out every bush in the world?
Okay, let's go. So Noach came is separately men and women. Min ha-behema ha-tahira, from the kosher behemoth, or min ha-behema asher einenu tahira, and from the animals which were not kosher, or min ha-efim, the birds and everything that crawls on the ground. Now, the Gemara learns out a very, very interesting but important lesson from this pasuk. Every word, every letter in Torah is very exact. We learn out halachas from one word, one letter, extra letter, missing letter. We learn out literally thousands of halachas. Yeah? Okay. Before the Torah says, okay, before also the Torah uses the expression, a behema asher einenu tahira. And what does the Torah say here, in this pasuk, especially in this pasuk? Min a behema tahira, and what should have the Torah said? Min a behema tmeya, from the impure animals. Right? The Torah doesn't say impure. The Torah doesn't say the animals which are not pure. The Torah adds 11 extra letters to use the word asher einenu tahira, which is not pure. Rather than making it short and sweet, behema tmeya. Okay? So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, ikim akosuv, the Torah adds another 11 letters, because the Torah said tamei instead of asher einenu tahira, to teach us. It's remarkable. A person should speak nicely. As they tell, don't say bad words. You know? You don't say bad words. The Torah says, behema tahira, pure animals, meaning kosher animals. And instead of the Torah saying a negative word, behema tmeya, which is not such a terrible word, it's impure. But the Torah, by adding extra 11 extra letters, teaches us a person should always speak nicely. Instead of saying an animal which is impure, you should say the animal which is not pure. So now the question is, you know how many times in Chumash it says the word tamei? Later on, when it speaks about kosher animals, non-kosher animals, behemat tmeya. Over there, the Torah clearly says, behemat tmeya. Tamei dika animal. Here, the Gemara says, the Torah says, you should speak nicely, and therefore the Torah puts in so many extra letters, and yet the Torah itself says, an animal which is tamei, impure. His explanation is very interesting and very basic. When the Torah is speaking halacha, and this is very interesting, halacha, by the way, when the Torah speaks halacha, you need to speak clearly. Meaning like this. If you want to say the animal is tamei, impure, and you say an animal which is not pure, a person might only hear the word pure. And then it will be wrong, because you're telling it's an animal which is not pure, tame, impure. Right? But the person might misunderstand it and think it means tahar. So therefore, like this, when you're talking about halacha, what you need to know, the Torah says you gotta speak clear, even if it's not the most best way. Okay? Here, the Torah is not telling us halacha. The Torah is telling us a fact. He brought in the kosher animals, and the animals which were not pure. It's not halacha, it's a story. So over here, the Torah teaches us, you need to speak nicely. But when it comes to halacha, you have to speak the way it is. Therefore, interesting things. In Torah, in Gemara Lashon or whatever, a blind person is not called Iver. Iver literally means blind. In Torah you have the word Iver, but again, it's by halacha. How does the Gemara call a blind person? Sagi Nohor. In Gemara, the expression for a blind person is Sagi Nohor. Literally, Sagi Nohor means an abundance of light. So it says in Sforim, why do we call a blind person abundance of light? Because we don't want to speak negative. So we speak, he has too much light for the eye to see. Okay. Huh?
The blind person, we call him Roshan. Roshan means to see.
No, speak of the Farsi.
No,
okay, how do they call a cemetery? You don't call Beis HaMason. Beit HaChaim. Right? Why? They're dead. When you call Beis HaChaim, nobody's living there. People think they get a nice view, they're gonna say, but between me and you, nobody's seeing anything. Okay? Why is it called Beis HaMason? Why is it called Beis HaChaim, which means the home of the living, rather than it's for the same reason. By the way, you have to understand, when the Torah calls these things, it's not a lie. Torah explains, a blind person is blind because there's too much light. Meaning, in order for the eye to see the right amount of power from the power of sight, Kaychariya, has to come into the eyeball to be able to see. What happens if there's too much light from the neshama to the eye, or there's a defect in the eye, and therefore there's too much power coming into the eye, so therefore you can't see. It's not negative, it's positive. But you're saying the same thing instead of a negative way blind. I'll tell you an example. The Rebbe spoke about this. Based on all these things, the Rebbe says he doesn't understand why a hospital is called Bet Cholim. Bet Cholim means the home of the sick. Right? The Rebbe said, why is it negative?
Okay,
you go Beit HaChaim, Sagi Nohor. The Rebbe said a hospital should be called Bet Rofim. The home of doctors. The Rebbe said, why is it Beit Cholim? Why are you calling it? It's a negative connotation. Based on Torah, it should be called Bet Rofim. The Rebbe once spoke after the Yom Kippur War. A bunch of in Hebrew they call them the Ptuyim, the handicapped soldiers that became Nabuch wounded. So they came to the Rebbe. The Rebbe spoke to them. In the centuries, the Rebbe spoke to them not in Ivrit. The Rebbe spoke to them Lashon Kodesh. He said, I'm going to speak in Lashon Kodesh, which I'm accustomed to. He didn't speak Ivrit. He spoke to them in Lashon Kodesh. But the Rebbe said, I don't understand why you people are called Ptuyim, wounded ones, you who gave up your lives to protect Jews, you guys should be called Mitzuyonim, the outstanding ones. The Rebbe said, why are they calling you Mitzuyonim? Wounded is a negative word. You guys gave up your lives to protect the Jews, you should be called Mitzuyonim. But this is an approach in Yiddishkeit that the Gemara, by the way, learns out from these few words over here. So when you're talking about making a halachic ruling, you know, you can't say not kosher. If somebody asks, is this kosher or not? You can't say it's not kosher. You have to say treif. Because maybe they won't hear the word not. You know, Jews hear with the selective hearing. And they'll hear the word kosher. So then the Torah says tameh. It's no good. But by your story, like by Noach, then it should be called, the Torah teaches, Beima Asher Einenu Tamei Atareido, which is not pure. Okay. So, Shnayim, Shnayim, Baal, Noach. Now, it's an interesting thing. Some people say, by the way, Noach was in charge of the animals. One of his kids was in charge of the beasts, and one of his kids were in charge of the birds.
What about his wife?
Who?
His wife.
Whose wife?
Noah.
No, they didn't work. They were on strike.
She was cooking for all the animals.
Huh?
Ladies.
They didn't work.
What was it? Animals and birds and what?
She had a vacation.
Animals, beasts, and birds. Before I saw it. Whatever. But here it says, Noach was in charge of the animals, one of his kids was in charge of the beasts, and the other one was in charge of the birds. Because it's impossible for one of them to do it all. Even though according to Rashi, Rashi says that Noach did it all. Okay. Shnayim, Shnayim, 2 by 2, meaning that's the minimal. By the kosher, it was 14. But Shnayim, Shnayim, Bo, and Neach, 2 by 2, they came. Zachar, and Nekeva, male and female. And again, this was in order to procreate after the flood and keep the world existing. Like Hashem commanded Neach. The animals came by themselves. Okay? Meaning like this. Noach, and this is what the Sama Farshim learned, Ramban says like this. The non-kosher animals came by themselves, 2 by 2. The kosher animals Noach was working on to get them to come. So that was why they didn't come himself.
He said that there were animals that came and weren't let on to the ark.
There are two animals, by the way. One is Re'im. I don't know the English word for the Re'im. Even in the English Chumashim, it calls it Re'im. It was very big. And so what did he do? So, Noach took the Re'im by the two horns. It's a massive, big animal. Took him by the two horns. So the head... The head was in the ark. The rest of it was out of the ark. The whole thing doesn't make sense anyway. No miracles. And Oig Melech HaBashan, Oig, was also on top of the ark, and Noach fed him through the window.
Food?
Yep.
What kind of food?
Vegetables.
Sushi.
Boiled sushi.
Fried. Okay. Vayilu Shiva Sayamim. It was 7 days later. The flood was on the earth. Like we said, after 7 days of Mr. Shalach's passing, the flood started. Okay, next pasuk is a very interesting Zoyar. And the next pasuk. Bishna sheish me'eshon al-chayi Noach, in the 600th year of Noach's life, in the second month, which Rashi learns is two opinions. Second from Nisan, or second from Tishrei. The same argument, if the world was created in Tishrei or in Nisan, the same rabbis argue if the flood happened in Cheshvan or in Iyar. Most opinions say the flood happened in the month of the Cheshvan, which was 2 months ago. Now, by the way, what year of creation was this, just for the record? 1056 after creation.
So what, this one? Wasn't it Tishrei?
Oh, second month. Uh-huh. Tishrei is the first month.
Right.
So the flood happened either in Cheshvan or in Iyar. Most opinions say it was Cheshvan. Okay. The flood took,
Zohar
1. The flood took place in the year 1056 after creation. Huh? That means 126 years after Adam died. 126. Right.
So, and he was 600 years old. Right?
Right, 1 second.
So, 600 plus 900?
No. The flood happened when Noach was 600.
Right.
No.
How old was Adam when he passed away?
930.
No. They saw each other. No one.
They didn't see each other.
They didn't see each other?
There's
enough
bubbles.
That's good.
So if you add to the 1600, it doesn't matter. That's what I'm just saying.
You're right. The 600 would be... It says he didn't see him, though. We learned that before, that the Medrash says he didn't see him. I don't know. It's a very good point. And he would have seen him.
I have a book at home, I'll
check. No, it says here.
Here, what year again was 1,050?
Here. Noach. No, this also doesn't make sense. No, this can't be right. Because Noach was born in the year 1056. I don't know, to say, he brings out from Seder Elam in the year 1056 from creation, but that can't be. Because Noach was born, if you look in the Chumash on page 25, in the blue Chumash that you have, page 25, says Noach was born 1056. That means that's when Noach was born. Unless if it means 1056 when Noach was born, not the flood. That means according to this, the flood took place in the year 1656 after creation.
No.
That makes sense.
No, yeah.
No, 650 from 1056.
Plus 600.
No, 600 Noach.
600.
600.
600, yes.
Noach was born in the year 1056.
Yeah.
So then the flood was the year 1656. You're right. It can't be. But then it didn't, so then he didn't see Adam. Adam died in 930.
Right.
And Noach was born 1056. So he didn't see him. So the flood took place in the year 1656. Okay? Now, the Zohar says like this. Oh, he brings it down here. Interesting.
Chart.
You know, by the way, in the Chumash at the bottom here, it says the year 1656 from creation is when the flood began.
Yeah.
Clearly. So this is a mistake over here. Instead of... Yeah, this is wrong. It's supposed to be 1650s. And this Chumash Taka says 1656. Okay, good. Thanks, you had a good point. Now, the Zohar says like this. In the 600th year of Noach's life, What does it say? Okay, we got to first see what the pasuk says. B'chedesh Hasheni, B'shiv Asayim L'chedesh, and the 17th day, either of Cheshvin or of Iyar, B'yem Azeh, on this day, the pasuk says, Nifka'u kol mayonis tehim rabba, all the fountains of the earth burst open, V'arubis Hashemayim Niftochu, and the windows of heaven opened up. What's the pasuk simply saying? When Noach was 600 years old, the whole water from underneath the earth opened, okay, and the windows of the heaven opened up, right, and everybody started raining all over the place. So the rain came from up and down all over the place. By the way, it says in the Medrash that after the flood, you know, everything got back to normal, except, you know, Chamei Tveria, that brings the Tveria. The Medrash says that's left over from the flood. Certain hot springs were left over from the flood. One of them, the Medrash says, was Chamei Tveria. The hot springs in Tveria is left over from the flood. All the other, you know, the hot water came from underneath, right? But that went back.
Not for Palm Springs.
Not for Palm Springs.
Basically, is it nine inches of the ground was washed?
9 inches of the Earth's topsoil was washed away.
Where?
Mars, Jupiter.
Everywhere.
Off the Earth.
Miami Beach.
You can't leave the Earth? Guys going up in space, don't leave the earth.
But that's in the space
job. No, this is special. Okay, let me see. But the Zohar says a remarkable thing. The Zohar says like this. In the year 5500, okay, this is what the Zohar says. In the year 5500, the earth, meaning secular wisdom, is going to open up, and the godly Torah wisdom, the heavens, are opened up. We know, historically, the year 5500 is when the secrets of the Torah became revealed. Kabbalah, Chassidus, all the secrets of the Torah became revealed in the year 5500. Right, 250 years ago. A little over. Right? And the scientific technology of the world, what's called the Industrial Revolution or everything else, here, the American and French Revolution, Industrial Revolution, explosion, political and economic thought, okay? So what happened in the last 250 years, give or take a few years, the wisdom of heaven and the wisdom of earth opened up. Got it? That's what the Zohar says. Why? Because the first 1,000 years of world is Sunday. Second 1,000 years of the world is Monday, right? Thursday is 4,000 to 5,000. Correct?
When did the Zohar say this?
1,800 years ago?
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's not the only prophecy the Zohar said. Anyway, so it says in the Zohar like this. Friday, right, what are we in now? Mashiach's coming in the year 6,000. That's the 7,000th year era, correct? Mm-hmm. So now, from the year 5,000 to 6,000, is Friday. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Erev Shabbos, after midday, no tachnun, you're already bringing in Shabbos. Erev Shabbos after Chatzis. Right? A lot of dinim of Shabbos supply. In the year 5500 is Erev Shabbos after midday. 5000 is Friday beginning. 5500 is the era of Erev Shabbos after midday, which is preparation for the coming of Mashiach, which is revelation of the coming of Mashiach. Now, Torah knowledge, I can understand why that opened up. Preparation for Mashiach, the secrets of Torah. You know, there's a din on Erev Shabbos, you're supposed to taste the food of Shabbos, the cholents and the meat and the... The men take it literally. They eat up all the food on Friday already. So, because Erev Shabbos after midday, the world's preparing for Mashiach. It's already beginning the era of Shabbos. So I understand why the heavenly windows opened up. The secrets of Torah started becoming revealed. But why in the world did God open up the earthly, the secular wisdoms? You know, the technology, I mean, it's unbelievable. In the last 250 years, what didn't happen in the whole 5,000 years. Okay, why did that happen? This is also preparing the world for Mashiach. How is this preparing the world for Mashiach? The world can now have a better understanding of godly concepts through the devices that we have today. For instance, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, if you meditate on three things, you'll never come to sin. Okay? An eye that sees, an ear that hears, and everything is written in the books. That's what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, correct? Yistaku b'shleisha dvarim, ve'inata boli de'aveda. Ayin raya, ve'ezen shema'as, v'chol ma'aseh v'sefi nuchta. Okay. 500 years ago, tell somebody with a secular perspective, an eye that sees everything I do, an ear that hears everything I do, I think you're nuts. What eye is there? Yeah? But now, we can understand it.
Yeah, but I don't think that people look at it towards it that it's godly. I think they look at it...
One second, we're coming to that point. We're coming to that point. But now, a person, if they want, can understand what that Mishnah means as an eye that sees. You have satellites that see everything that's going on in every part of your house.
They can hear you
can hear you anywhere, and everything that you do is already recorded.
Yeah.
Now we can understand it. But we can take it even more. The concept of tshuva takes instantaneously. It's God's salvation, Yeshua Hashem, Kehed of Ayin, is instantaneous. The whole world today is instantaneous. Everything is instant. This is getting the world ready for the coming of Mashiach. Not only that, but it goes even more into that. Here. Okay, the Zeri says these two developments were both a preparation for final redemption. Okay, Lochera, that makes, okay. How can we say though that the earthly wisdom is a preparation for Mashiach? Okay, now he says like this. One of the prophecies regarding the time of Mashiach, all flesh, what does the Pasuk say? V'ro'o kol basar yachtov, all flesh will see that God is speaking. God's presence will be discernible to the physical senses. Scientific developments over the past 150 years have brought to our senses phenomenon that was previously deemed to be supernatural. Through television, radio, telephone, you can see and hear from one end of the world to the next. Okay? So now, like I said, an eye that sees, an ear that hears, you can understand. So what is it saying? Modern technology, and that's why Hashem revealed it now, is preparing the world for Mashiach, which means that the modern technology needs to be used for the service of Hashem. Because now the service of Hashem is so much... One second. There's a whole debate, as everybody knows. Yes, internet. No internet in the houses. Yeah, no. Okay? But, I mentioned, when they had that massive gathering in Madison Square Garden, in New York years ago, a few years ago, when they came out, everybody was coming out against the internet and cell phones and iPhones and all that, yeah? And the whole three-hour gathering was bashing it all, yeah? Then after the gathering, they all got up to Davin Ma'ariv.
On their phones.
Everybody took out their phones at Davin Ma'ariv. They're bashing the cell phones for 3 hours, and then all of a sudden, everybody's taking that. They don't even realize. They all took out the iPhones. You can see the videos of it. And they're all davening Ma'ariv.
You can see much better. There's a light under that. It's so small. You can make it big. You can make it any way you want it. So what's...
Okay. What, let me tell you the true Torah approach, even though some people probably see it's not true, but where we're coming from, where we come from, okay, what we're taught. A knife could be bad, and it could be good, right? So what does a parent do? A parent teaches their children how to use the knife in a good way, not in a bad way. That's part of bringing up kids, right? Something is good, something is bad. Take the four major elements, fire, air, earth, water. Fire, is it good? Yeah, it's good and it's bad. You need to cook, you need warmth, you have a fire. Can it burn down your house? Yeah, God forbid it could. So what do you have to teach somebody? There's something called fire. Use it the right way. Water, air, right? Earth. You can have an earthquake, you can have things that grow. What is the job of a parent? And teachers and educators. There is such a creature in the world called a knife, a fire, right? You teach children the benefits of it and how it could be dangerous. And there you have to be careful. If there is such a thing, and it's here to stay, by the way, whether we like it or not, there's something called the internet. Yeah, there is something called the internet. So what's the job? And the internet, by the way, you know how many people are learning Torah because of the internet? Millions of Jews are learning Torah now because of the internet. Do you know how many classes and lectures and good things are happening in the world because of the internet? The internet could also be bad. Of course it could be bad. So what do we need to teach? How to use it for good and how to use it for bad? If Hashem created something in the world... If Hashem created something in the world, we have to use it and learn how to use it the right way. That's the role of a parent, educator, and the world at large. How to use it the right way, not the wrong way. And therefore, what happened in the year 5500, Desire says, the earth is going to open up. There's all preparation for Mashiach. There's all preparation for Mashiach. You can have so much good that could be utilized to understand Torah, to understand godliness, to understand concepts of Torah, to understand what Mashiach is about. And that happened in the year 5500 when Hashem opened up the earth and all the secular wisdoms that came up. At the same time, He opened up the heavens. Vast amount of Torah came out in the last 250, 300 years. Torah that never existed before. The amount of books, the amount of learning, the amount of... that never existed before. This was the preparation, and that's what the Zohar says. The Pasuk says was in the 600th year of Noach life. Torah says, what happened? The earth opens up, the heavens open up, and you have to prepare, utilize it all for the preparation of Mashiach.
Can I give a different perspective?
Yeah.
There's this. I agree that this tremendous amount of knowledge was generated through the 17 and 1800s, unprecedented. And what happened after that? You had, over the last 120 years, you've had world wars, mass killings, nuclear bombs, global warming, technology which most people have replaced God with, and there's a completely other side to that. Yes, there could be benefits, and there's wonderful learning, but the studies show that if this phone is right here while I'm learning, I lose brain power.
Yeah. So that's why, because we choose. One second. In other words, these secular devices, let's call them that, okay, could be used for good and could be used for bad. We choose to use them for bad. Okay? It's pretty sad, and this is the vast majority of the world, but it's sad, that the phones control us. We don't control the phones. The phones control us. But that's not the phone's fault. It's not the phone's fault.
It's our
limitations of laziness. Don't tell me we can't control to put down the phone. We have the ability to do it. We choose not to. It's not that the phone is no good. The internet is no good. It's our choosing to use it for something wrong. But it's not that that is bad. It could be bad, it could be good. We choose to use it.
Well, it's not necessarily choices, because at the biggest companies in the world, they're studying your brain and your brain and your to figure out what to do to keep you addicted to use it in the wrong way.
I understand. But a person who's addicted has the ability before they become addicted not to become addicted.
You know, it's to a point where if you're a kid but, and you're not doing certain things or commuting in certain ways, you're
an outcast.
100%.
Jews were always outcasts.
No, I'm saying within the Jewish community.
So from Jews were always the outcasts.
No, from Jews.
No, I'm serious.
No.
The scientific technology God created, obviously, everything's from Hashem, to prepare the world for Mashiach. We have the choice to use it for good or to use it for bad. We can use a knife for good or a knife for bad. We can use a fire to cook food or to, God forbid, burn down somebody's house. That choice is ours. This is a difficult choice. So many people are of the opinion, keep away from it, ghetto yourself up, and then you'll be saved. But the problem is, in the world now, it's very unrealistic.
When you're missing out on the good.
You can't have, I'll give you an example, it's later. There are schools that don't allow kids to have internet at home. Yeah? Yet, when they give kids homework to do, the only way the kids could do the homework is online. I'm talking about factual stuff. There are schools that don't allow you to have internet in your house, and yet when especially the secular teacher gives you homework, how can I do the homework? Get the information online. No. That's hypocrisy. But the fact is, we live in a world where the internet, I'm talking a general word for all these things, dominates.
Rabbi, recently the kids do their homework right online.
Right. Yeah.
No, I mean, they put the answers online.
Everything's online today.
Yeah.
You want to talk to your wife, you talk to her online.
Over dinner online.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you leaving?